You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome back to the Locked On Cavs podcast, your daily look, or in case of the summer, three times a week-ish look at the Cleveland Cavaliers from the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Chris Manning, your host, and I run FearTheStory.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, or wherever else you get podcasts. A five-star review is, as always, the best way to support the show. Find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWright. Joining me today is Ben Pfeiffer. He's a writer for the places like The Rookie Wire, The Bird Writes, 8.9 Seconds. And we're going to talk about Kevin Porter Jr., who I think Ben would probably agree with this, but he's a very fascinating pick for the Cavs at number 30. I think a good value pick at 30. We'll get into a bunch of that and more. But Ben, how's it going?
How's it going? Thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, so how are you, just before we get into the full-on kind of breakdown here, how are you coping with the lack of real basketball right now? NBA basketball, because WNBA is fully on. You know, there's some FIBA stuff coming up, but no NBA basketball. No real stuff to break down in terms of college prospects as of just yet. But where are you at in just, like, dealing with our summer hiatus here?
Yeah, as a full-on NBA draft fanatic, there's always stuff for me to watch. So I have been working on preparing to for the next year's class. So I'm watching a lot of high school basketball, a lot of AAU and EYBL, and a lot of last year's college games. That's basically what I've been watching. And FIBA is on my watch list. I watched a lot of Summer League. So I've been pretty good on the terms of not, of basketball. Had just watched some old NBA games too. But I think I've survived the drought, as you could say, of NBA basketball pretty well so far.
Yeah, I'm about ready. I could use like another week, but we'll see where this ends up.
Soon enough, we'll get preseason action at least.
Yeah, and I think FIBA will be like a good appetizer for what's to come. But let's look at Kevin Porter Jr. Cavs, again, get him at 30, paid a bunch of money to, I believe it ended up being the Pistons to get him. Yeah. There's a couple
four
trades there.
Four second-round picks, I think.
Yeah, a bunch of second-round picks. It's a record amount of money for their slot. What did you make of that? Like, and what do you when you look at the positives of Kevin Porter Jr., if you're going to come in and say, like, okay, this is, like, the guy, I like this pick for the Cavs, here's what he could bring to them, especially at that, come being a 30th overall pick and not, like, a top 10 pick, what do you just make of his strength as a prospect?
Yeah, so Kevin Porter is a pretty ideal 30th pick type because he is he's an elite physical talent, and His combine measurements are a bit underwhelming, but that totally undersells how incredible an athlete is. His max vertical might not be as high, but he gets off the floor as quick as any athlete in this draft, maybe Zion. And he's really strong. He can go up through contact and finish, and he's super, super quick. In the full court, he's fast. In the half court, maybe his most valuable skill, and the skill that might be better than any other player in this draft, is his ability to create separation, creating his own shot. He's ridiculously quick, changing speeds and changing directions and blowing by defenders, going downhill. And when Kevin Porter Jr. is doing the right things and taking the right shots, we'll get into that, he can be a truly lethal shot creator because there just aren't too many guys who can keep up with him at a pure athletic standpoint. And that's really the main thing with Kevin Porter is his physical tools are really fantastic, and if he can fix a couple things that we'll get to later, he could be a really, really effective shot creator. And he sometimes gets billed as this, like, this non-feel, no IQ player, and while his decision making definitely does need some improvement, I don't think it's as bad as advertised, especially on defense. I think even though he played in zone a lot, he's pretty aware and he's engaged, even if he's not always making the right decisions. At least he's trying on defense, and he does make good rotations on time. He's active, helping pick and roll, and he had a two steal and two block percentage, which is pretty much baselines you want to see prospects hit that are generally good. And those, more than his ability to get steals or blocks, are more signs of his feel for the game and his defensive awareness and activity. And with his physical tools, if he really locks in and focuses and hones his anticipation and things like that, and that usually does happen through experience. Most 18-year-olds are bad defenders. Then he could be a really impactful defender as well. And offensively, he definitely takes some questionable shots, and his overall decision-making isn't great, but he's a pretty capable passer, and he's a willing passer, and he has vision. So it's another thing that could improve with more focus and more approach development. There's a lot to like with Kevin Porter, Porter Jr., and at 30, you really can't go wrong with an athletic talent like him.
Yeah, so my belief in this pick being smart is, number one, I think you just, like, watch some of the film, and there's, like, his shot is kind of an interesting thing. I don't like know enough about shot mechanics or feel comfortable offering takes on shot mechanics to like say that his shot form is bad or anything, but it's interesting. Like, it's not like a traditional.
I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good.
Okay, so like,
he basically shoots from his shoulder.
Yeah,
I'm no shot doctor myself, but I know that's not good.
Yeah, I don't want to say that, like, different rules apply to guys of that caliber, but I wonder if, like, part of his rookie year is, like, getting that to be more natural in some way.
That's definitely interesting to think about, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't know, and I don't think we didn't see him in summer league. We didn't see what the Cavs – we don't really have any idea of what the Cavs really have planned for him, but you look at getting him at 30, you look at a guy that should be able to play, like, a couple different positions in the league that has, like, an insane athletic profile for that size – for that pick, rather, has a great size for his frame, has some really, really nice, like, moves and feel for the, at least the offensive side of the ball. And I just, like, I look at a guy like that, and I look at what John Beilein's going to come in and do and what he had at Michigan. I don't know if there's, like, a guy that he had at Michigan that, like, maybe, like, LaVert was kind of the best kid's example of this, but even he wasn't he's not the athletic kind of talent that Porter Jr. is. I just, like, really I'm, like, fascinated by, like, what he can do in a system and with a structure that the Cavs seemingly are trying to implement for their young core, what he looks like and how much better that can make him. And if, like, that accountability, because we know there are some off-the-court issues, some injury concerns too, but some suspension issues that he had at USC. I've never heard anyone in the Cavs organization or in the draft process, like, say they have concerns about that. But Beilein's coming into set a culture. Is he empowered by that, I think, is a really interesting kind of facet of this.
Yeah, I mean, going off your tangent, maybe like Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway Jr. were some pretty good college shot makers he had, but obviously neither of those two have really panned out in the NBA. So, yeah, I mean, Kevin Porter is definitely one of the more talented guys he's got to work with.
What do you have as a concern of him as a weakness? For me, it's just like I feel like there are going to just be some growing pains for him. I look at Dylan Windler, another Cavs rookie, and I know he's going to come in and shoot threes and be comfortable doing that. I feel like Kevin Porter Jr. is going to have some sort of a role adjustment once he gets into the league. And I think that's going to just – there's going to be some bumps for him that are going to be kind of obvious and take some time for him to work through. We'll see about his shot. We'll see about his kind of playing more man defense and how long it takes him to kind of be functional-ish on that end. But what do you make of – what are some of the concerns you would have for him as a rookie and then, you know, outwards the next, like, 5 years as a prospect?
Yeah. First of all, we have to mention his off-court concerns, like
yes.
You previously mentioned. Those can – I mean, those you have to hope he can improve under this culture that John Beilein's trying to instill. But still, he had personal conduct violations. He was imposed – he was suspended by USC itself. He's had physical concerns. So those are definitely things you worry about with Kevin Porter and things you have to take into account. Going back to on the court, one of his biggest weaknesses and the biggest red flags is – just his approach to the game. Talk about, like, his decision making is less about his passing, because he's pretty fine hitting open guys when he collapses defenses, which he can do pretty frequently with his ability to draw attention. But he really doesn't like attacking the rim, which is not ideal for a guy of his physical tools and handling ability. Like, so often you'll see him. Throw together some hesitation between leg dribbles, totally freeze his defender, get a lane to the basket, but then he'll step back for a long two or a tougher three when he had a wide open lane to the basket. And that's definitely a problem, because you're bleeding a lot of value when you're settling for these long twos and even threes as opposed to layups. And with his I do contend his vision is solid. If he goes to the rim more, he'll get defenders committing to his drives. That'll open easy passes to dump offs to bigs or shooters. and he'll draw more fouls. And with an approach change, it's kind of similar to Zach LaVine had this issue coming out of college. And at some point, Zach LaVine just decided to go to the rim. And last season was maybe his best season as a scorer and his best season as a pro. And he was really, really great as a self-creator. And that's really a parallel to Kevin Porter's game. If he can change his mindset and attack the rim more, lock in more on defense, lock in more on off, lock in more as a playmaker, that really improves a lot of things for him. And the other really big red flag for Kevin Porter is his free throw percentage, as free throw percentage is probably the main predictor of three-point shooting projection in the NBA, much more so than three-point percentage itself. As Kevin Porter shot 41% from three at USC on 68 attempts, but one, that's a small sample, and two, it's probably unsustainable. And his free throw percentage was an abysmal 52.2%. Also a small sample, but that's really a bad sign for his future shooting development. In high school, during his AAU team, he shot 68.3% from the free throw line, which is probably more indicative of what his actual number is going to be closer to, but definitely some concerns on how good his shooting can get with that low free throw percentage. But on the counter, he is going to get a lot of open shots because of his ability to create space. So the more open looks he gets, the better, and the better, more he can increase his free throw percentage. And it's really about – that's really going to be something to monitor, how his touch looks around the rim, how his free throw percentage is, and then monitor how his decision-making looks and if he's getting to the rim more. Because I think he's definitely never had a coach like John Beilein who's gonna instill toughness and a good culture into him and try to get the most out of him and know how to get the most out of him. John Beilein is renowned for turning low-level recruits into first-round picks. He's done it countless times, and I think he can definitely do it again with Kevin Porter, but there's definitely things to work on still.
So I think all that's fair, and I also just think, like, I just wonder what he, like, some of the off-ball stuff, some of just the stuff where it's like, we know so much about his creation ability. I wonder what he looks like if he's kind of operating off-ball a little bit more, and how he gets comfortable with that. I know, like, he has the ability to cut, he has some nice lob finishes, but a lot of the best moments he had from the tape I've watched is just like him getting into the lane and finishing. There's going to be a transition there, especially if he's playing with Sexton, Darius Garland, off of Kevin Love. Like, that's going to be a transition. But as we wrap up this first segment here, we're going to touch more on the Cavs core later, but specifically when you look at their young pieces, so I'm going to put Sexton, Osman, Garland, Dylan Windler, and Porter as the five. And no disrespect to Andre Zizic, he's just kind of in a weirder spot.
Dean Wade disrespect, too.
Yeah, we'll get into Dean Wade, because I remember you being a fan, but of the guy, we'll put Dean Wade in the decision there, just so we don't shade them. But
no,
we
don't have to.
I knew he wouldn't be above.
He's on a two-way, so.
Yeah, he's interesting, though. Summer League, I was like, oh, like, this guy's got real juice.
Should not have gone undrafted.
No, I think the Cavs had another guy, Yovel Zuzman, who, like, also, like, why did this
I
guy?
Love him, too.
Yeah, big fan. Where is he on your and the Cavs ranking of their main young pieces they kind of are assembling right now for this next stage? Where does he rank for you?
What do you mean?
Like, if you were saying, like, okay, like, if I could, like, order them in terms of who I prioritize as, like, the guys I'm the highest on right now as we look into the next couple years of this franchise, like, where does Porter fall on that list for you?
I mean, I guess talking about realism, it has to be three, because the Cavs are going to prioritize Sexton and Garland just based on their draft position and their expectations. And Sexton, I'm probably lower on Sexton than consensus and probably Cavs people, but he definitely showed a lot of good things at the end of his rookie year, especially with his shot making. And I'm also not as high on Garland. I actually had Kevin Porter Jr. higher on my board than I had Darius Garland. So I'm a big Kevin Porter Jr. fan, but I do worry about his fit here. But I think for Cleveland's development as an organization, prioritizing improving Garland and Sexton's game is going to be the most important thing to do. With Kevin Porter definitely up there because of his upside, but they're going to and they should be prioritizing those two early draft picks.
Yeah, I think that's about right. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. And just so people know, if you're looking for another Cleveland Lockdown podcast, you should check out Lockdown Browns. Jeff Floyd does a great job covering the Browns, who are super interesting, super chaotic. Whole bunch going on with that football team right now. But check them out wherever you get your podcasts. And we're going to be right back with more with Ben Pfeiffer. 3, 2, 1. Okay. We talked about Beilein a little bit, Ben, as we get back here. But when you look at the system he played at USC, that this, according to KenPom, was above average in offense. Porter had some injuries, the off-court stuff, etc. How different was what he was doing at USC going to be different from what we sort of expect from what Beilein is going to run in Cleveland?
Very different is the pretty is the easiest way I can put it. It's going to be a big change for him. Definitely a change for the better, I think, which is what you want, obviously. USC, despite being a top prospect and clearly the most talented guy on that team, his usage was pretty low. He played a lot off the ball and just kind of sitting in the corner, not doing much. He only had a 22.8 usage, which is way too low for a top prospect like him. And he would just wait, not get the ball. And then defensively, he played zone most of the time, so it's always hard to really get a read on his defensive ability. But John Beilein's offensive system, it's definitely going to be a breath of fresh air for Kevin Porter, allowing him to create more offense for himself more regularly. And I'm not sure if he's planning on implementing a similar or the same system he used at Michigan, but at Michigan, his team ran a lot of basket cuts, either backdoor cuts or middle cuts or after handoffs, they'd fake cut. I think that's going to be a good way to get Kevin Porter some value off the ball, because with his athleticism, he could be a really dynamic cutter, and I think that's just going to be another way to open up his value off the ball. So it's definitely a system improvement for Kevin Porter as a whole.
I agree with that as well. I think, like I said this earlier, I remain fascinated by this, but I just think, like, getting a guy as talented in him in Beilein's system, I feel like if it works out, and it's maybe why the Cavs seem to be smitten with Kevin Porter Jr., it's just, like, they believe that can kind of bring the most there. Like, this is a guy that they loved him throughout the draft process. They gave up money and picks to get him. But I think they know that there is some risk here, but they feel that flow and that culture set up by Beilein is going to just make life easier for him. And, like, I feel like if Porter Jr., like, probably isn't, if everything, works out, if everything works out for him, or, like, 90% of, him kind of works out, this is a guy that, was Mr. Basketball in Washington. He was a 5-star recruit, like, a top 20 recruit by some services, as low as, like, 40 or something. This is, like, a highly touted guy. Things did not work out for me, USC. He had some personal conduct issues or whatever, and I don't think Beilein's a guy that's 100% going to, like, put up with that stuff. He's kind of going to be a no-nonsense kind of guy, but I think if he, like, brings things to the positive and the Cavs can get the positive things out of him, it just seems like this is going to thrive, and it just seems like also, like, he's not the featured young guy. He's not going to be, like, the guy that has to carry everything. Sexton and Garland are going to have to kind of do that. I think Osman, just by virtue of being older, is there. And, like, as long as Kevin Love is around, he has a guy that's going to allow him room to make mistakes, allow him room to also just get open looks. Like, he's not going to be thrown, I think, into, like, a aimless situation. Like, I think what the Cavs are trying to do is really smart and kind of, I think, helps a guy like Kevin Porter Jr., who I think seems like structure and, like, driving him in a certain direction is, like, the way you can best get something out of him.
Yeah, I think structure is going to be a key there for him, as there was lots of turmoil during his freshman season, and getting him grounded with a good bunch of veterans. I know the Cavs don't have a young team, but they'll have some older guys to rely on, to Kevin Porter to lean on, and that's going to be important for him, to lean on his veterans, to lean on his coaching, and just to learn how to be a pro more than anything.
That's why I think, like, I don't know where you kind of come down on this, but, like, I'm not big into the Cavs flipping Kevin Love just to, like, get a first-round pick back or something, right? Like, I think Kevin Love, even if he's not the best version of himself anymore, or, like, has, some limitations or whatever, I think he's a guy that can come in and, like, you can run an offense through him, you can run sets around him, allow guys like Kevin Porter Jr. and Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, like, a little more breathing room to kind of figure some stuff out and make some mistakes. And I look at, like, And I just, like, look at the other thing in the roster. Like, if you take Kevin Love off of this roster, I have no idea how the Cavs, like, don't have to throw everything on their young guys and rely on Beal system to just keep things afloat. If you keep Kevin Love around, you have just, like, some structure there that I think makes things definitely a bit easier.
I sort of agree. I think it depends on the offer. I think the right offer, I would say goodbye to Kevin Love. Just at the point where the Cavs are, at least in terms of my valuation of their current prospects, I think taking just getting as many stabs at prospects in the next couple of years as you can is important. If you're getting like late first or seconds, then yes, and maybe some negligible young players, then yeah, I think it's probably worth keeping around. But if you're getting high projected picks in 2020 and 2021, I think it's pretty easily a trade I'd make. I mean, 2020 draft is pretty deep, but not, and 2021 draft has a generational talent like a Luka Zion type and Cade Cunningham. So it depends on the offer. If they can get something that would really accelerate their rebuild, I think they should do it. But I definitely do see the value in having that veteran leadership, veteran presence. And if it can produce something tangible in the developments of Garland, Sexton, Kevin Porter, all those guys, then I can definitely see the case for wanting to keep him around longer. And maybe Sexton or Garland or somebody unexpectedly takes a huge leap and accelerates that rebuild, like a De'Aaron Fox type leap. I'm not saying it's probable or anything, but if it happens, it would be good to have Kevin Love around in that situation. So I see both sides, even if I lean the other way as you.
What do you think is like the minimum you would have to get offered for Kevin Love to like make that a conversation? Like, I think it's like a pick, a good-ish young player. Like, I don't expect to get a star player back, but like I need like someone I can like feel like I can build around. And I look at like I need a pick that's not just going to be like the 28th pick on the draft or something. Like, I need a shot at getting something of value to make it kind of worth it. Because like the Cavs are already going to have a bunch of cap space next summer. Like, his contract's de-escalating. He helps just, I think, with the fan base that you have that guy kind of around. And as long as he's not, as far as we know, he has not been like, I want out. I just think I need to get a couple things of value, not just like one thing. Where do you stand on that?
I think at some point, like, the Cavs could get a point where they just want to get something out of him. But there's, I mean, I've seen trade offers like to the Suns with Michael Bridges, or to the Thunder for Steven Adams, or to the Blazers for lots of picks and Anthony Simons. I think there's a lot of good offers there, and I would probably be looking for probably like some sort of a team that's likely going to give you a lottery shot in the next couple years, first round pick, maybe multiple first round picks, or a good young player. And obviously depending on the degree of goodness of that young player would depend on what the picks return. Like, let's say if you're getting someone like I mentioned Michael Bridges from the Suns, then I don't think I wouldn't be too worried about getting picks, because he's a fantastic young talent. But if you're getting someone lower level, then you want more picks to balance it out. So I think you definitely just want to make sure you're getting some more pieces that you can really build around, like something that's not marginal, because Kevin Love really does still have value to some teams, and he could be a useful piece for a contender. So
Phoenix is the one I'd like talk myself into them doing something, because like he's got the James Jones connection. They need adults in the room.
Sons, and they do things that aren't always smart.
Yeah, so like maybe the Kobe Altman gets some leverage. All right, we're gonna take one last break, and then we're gonna come back with more with Ben Pfeiffer. But just so people know, the Locked On NFL podcast from the Locked On Podcast Network is getting a rebrand. It is still the great, it is still the absolute great NFL podcast that you want to cover, that covers all 30 teams. It's a great, great bit. But Locked On NFL is now going to be hosted by Brian Peacock, and Matt Williamson is going to be the analyst on the show. Matt, of course, has a great NFL mind. He's got a deep background in the game. You're going to get the insight of that former scout, Matt Williamson, on our daily national NFL podcast. So please go check that out. A bunch of great stuff here. We got Postmates as a sponsor of this whole network. And if you've gone already, Trevor Booker is going to be in the Locked On NBA podcast on Monday. Last week, he talked about the deals, talked about title contenders, and there's a whole bunch of other great stuff there. So please go check out that and all of our great sponsors, Bombas, Manscaping, and I'll check it out there. It's all great. We'll be right back with more from Ben Pfeiffer. All right, we are back with more with Ben Pfeiffer from, again, Rookie Wire, the Bird Writer, who's going to be writing about Zion and that really interesting young core run by former Cavs GM David Griffin. But, Ben, when you I want to just say this. When I look at Kevin Porter Jr. and him coming into this rookie season, the Cavs are very thin at wing. They only have really two other bodies that can, like, functionally actually play the three in a real way. That's Jetty Osman and Dylan Windler. They have no reason to let young guys play. I don't think that you can throw him to the Wolves right away. I think you do need to be patient with him. I do think, like, just because I think Windler can come in and shoot, I would be just kind of lean on that and him just being a little more developed at this point and let Kevin Porter Jr. figure some stuff out, even if that's, like, the opposite of sort of where their careers might be headed. I don't think, depending on how things go, I don't know if we can, like, write off the G League is like a thing where he just goes and plays for a little bit. I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world. We'll see what his shot looks like as another thing. But what do you think is like the for him as he enters year one, his first year as NBA career, first year on this stage where he's going to have to put the talent to work here? What do you just think is like the ideal structure for him?
Yeah, it's definitely it's not the most ideal situation for Kevin Porter because, like you said, he's not ready to get thrown into the Wolves and just be thrust into a starting role where he's asked to create a lot. He's definitely going to be able to do it, and he's going to be able to create his own shot, and he's going to be able to put up points, but there's still a lot of holes in his game, like, of course, relating to his mental game and his shooting. We don't know how that's going to be. I think the G League could be a good option for him just to get more comfortable just learning how to play pro basketball. It's really difficult on the Cavs. The Cavs just aren't really loaded with plus passers, and he's going from a system at USC where he had guys like Benny Boatwright and Nick Rakosevic and Jordan Usher and Jonah Matthews, guys who are not plus passers or playmakers really at all, to a Cavs team with Colin Sexton and Darius Garland as their two primary offensive weapons, two guys who are questionable playmakers. So Kevin Porter's going to have to do a lot of getting his own, which is really not ideal for a guy like him. That's why I do think, like we already said, that the G League could be a good option. I think patience is going to be important, and I think he's not going to be good this season. I would be pretty surprised if he was good and made a positive impact this season, but actually not what you got him for. You got him for the upside, and it's going to be important for them to be patient with him and let him develop at his own pace while still making sure he stays on his schedule and is learning fast and is improving his discipline and learning how to be an NBA player.
For him, I don't think starting makes sense. I don't know it, like, what the right amount of minutes for him necessarily is. Like, do you see him functioning? I see him functioning as he needs to play the two and the three and not have to guard, like, slide down to the four just yet. I think that's an interesting future for him, but mm-hmm. I think 2-3 is sort of like where he needs to stick right now. I mean, do you see, like, any way he does it like that? Is there anything beyond that that you think he reasonably can do? Or is it just, like, he just has to find his minutes in those spots and someone like Jetty's going to have to just eat small ball 4 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely interesting you brought up about the future small ball four. I mean, he definitely has the physical tools to do it in the future, but it's not something he's ever done before, and it's not something I'd really want him to do as a rookie, or at least not right away.
No, this is like 2 years down the road. He's 22 years old, has, like, put on weight because he's pretty skinny, and he's 19. He's like 6'6". Like, I think he needs to grow into that, but I think that's like a way he gets a little more interesting if he like can end up being like a three position guy, especially if the league keeps going where it's going.
Yeah, but right now I think you hit it. He's definitely just a two and a three. He's a wing guy. He's not a point guard for sure. And he's not a four, so he's going to be probably relegated to playing some off-ball wing. Maybe as a bench creator, he could get some more reps creating his own shot and trying to create for others in spurts. I think that'll be good for him. But yeah, it's not a great situation for him at this point.
When you look at like guys on the Cavs roster that you think that would make sense for him to play with, do you think it should be with veteran guys? Should it be with other young guys? Like, how do you? I think it's like with Kevin Love as much as possible, but I think that for everybody, that's a young guy in this roster. So how would you kind of maybe deploy him to start and see what happens?
Yeah, you definitely want to play him with as many plus passers as you can. Kevin Love is one guy. I think he'll benefit from Larry Nance's passing quite a bit as well. But they're, like I said, they're short on passing. And that's what I really think would be big for him. I'm definitely worried about him playing with Garland and Sexton at this point, unless Sexton's made massive strides as a playmaker. And Garland, I doubt he has. Maybe he has at this point. But it's going to be, like I said, a lot of trying to get his own shot, and he's going to pass up on opportunities. And of course, with that, there's not a lot of there's not many defenders to really insulate him if he struggles on defense early. But the Cavs are going to want to get, I mean, just the best environments for him are probably just the best lineups the Cavs can throw out with Nance and with Love, and probably eventually with Sexton. Hopefully he makes some, he'd made some strides this offseason, and hopefully Garland can improve his overall game for this rookie season. But yeah, I agree with you, and just getting him out there with Love and Nance are going to be important.
I think David Nwaba would have been like sneaky useful for this team,
he would have been very useful for them. Yeah, like, they really need wing defense, and
he was the only guy that provided it last year when they were like the worst defense in the league. I can't quite figure out, like, aside from just like they maybe told him they were like going to let him be an injured free agent and he didn't want to come back. Like, it might just be as simple as that, but that's
maybe it's just a favor, and
yeah,
because he wants to play for a contender, and yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not a great thing for the Cavs that they just don't have him anymore. So I think that would have helped a guy like Nwaba, or having a guy like Nwaba around, rather. But wrap it up kind of on these last two questions. Number one, what would you just say, Ben, is a successful – what does a successful rookie year for Kevin Porter Jr. look like? If the Cavs empower him in the right ways, allow him to get through some of his growing pains and stuff like that, where does he get to and how does he end up just kind of coming out right on the other side?
Like I said previously, I don't think there's any scenario where Kevin Porter has a good rookie season. And I also don't think he needs to have a good rookie season, you know, in terms of impact metrics, counting stats, just eye tests, all of that, to consider it a success. I mean, Kevin Porter is very much an upside pick. He's got a pretty low floor, but he's got one of the higher ceilings in a weak draft. And just making little progress on his game, showing that his passing is improving, showing that his overall defensive focus is improving, getting to the rim more, and especially a big thing would be his three-point percentage stabilizing and his free throw percentage stabilizing. That's probably the most tangible thing that we could knock as positive improvement. And also seeing that he stays clean off the court, no suspensions, no drama with his teammates. Obviously, we can't really say no injuries because injuries happen, but that would be nice. You know, we want to hear those reports coming out that he's a hard worker and that he's a good person and he's doing all those things that we're not sure if he is based on his freshman year at USC. So it's not going to be good, and there's going to be a lot of rough moments. But in spite of those rough moments, if he can show good things and good things that are auspicious signs for his future development, I think you can call that a success.
And where for you are you at on the Cavs core? What do you think of just like so they have Garland, they have Sexton, they have Kevin Porter Jr., Dylan Windler, Jetty Osman, Ante Zizic, Dean Wade are kind of their young guys right now, with Wade being on a two-way, with Zizic kind of being the guy I'm least sure is going to be around for a long time. What do you just stand on where we are with this Cavs team and what this young group is as it is right now before like more drafts come and stuff, but where it is right now, what do you think?
Let me just ask, have they used their second two-way contract?
No, they haven't. So here's
sign Zusman, please.
So here's my theory on Zusman. I think everything that's out there is like he probably could go back to Israel and like
Maccabi,
get a 4-year deal. I don't think he's taking a two-way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Man, I would decide to do a guarantee if I was the Cavs.
I would too. They have a roster spot. They technically have JP McCura on a Exhibit 10 deal right now.
He's better than JP McCura. I mean, he's better than a lot of guys. He'd give them the defense and the passing that they desperately need on the wing. So
yeah,
just my gush over him. So
yeah, I love Zuzman. I'm all in on them signing him if they could.
Yeah, I would be super all in on that. So Kobe Altman, if you're listening, Yovel Zusman, sign him. Okay. All right, so on to the rest of their young core. Like I said, I'm quite a bit lower on the young core than probably most. Sexton, he showed a lot of good things last season, and especially regarding his shooting. He shot the ball a lot better than I expected him to shoot it last year, and his 40% from three, especially if he improves his volume and difficulty, I don't think that's super sustainable, but, I mean, he shot 83% at the free throw line, which is really impressive. So there's definitely a chance he's just a lot better of a shooter than we thought. But still, he's still got a lot to work on. I mean, his passing is still pretty rough, and his overall decision making. Even if it did improve some, he has to show he can do consistently. And on the defensive end, there's always going to be kind of a cap to how good he can be on defense because of his size and because of his tools. But just improving engagement, improving awareness on that end to show he's really good enough to be a starting NBA point guard. Because he was one of the worst players in the league last year for a majority of the season. That end season stretch pulled him back up a little bit, but he was still pretty terrible. And especially by impact metrics, they painted how poor his rookie campaign was. If he wants to prove to me and to many others that he's more than a scoring microwave six-man type, he definitely needs to keep working on his passing. And that's kind of a similar thing with Darius Garland, who's pretty similar to Colin Sexton in a lot of ways. Darius Garland's got more of a dynamic handle. He's quicker, and he projects to potentially be a better shooter. But he has those same passing and playmaking field concerns. He has some finishing at the rim without great strength or explosiveness. How is he going to get to and consistently finish at the rim? And defensively, he's a fairly okay college point guard defender. He was engaged and he tried, but like I said, his size is always going to limit him. So I'm not really sure how the Cavs make two small point guards who don't pass well or play defense well work. And that's something they're going to have to figure out. You've seen parallels drawn to Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. That's pretty rich for me. I think if anything, it'll be two CJ McCollums if they hit their ceiling, because I don't think either is ever going to be the offensive player of Damian Lillard's caliber. But it's all about just becoming much better shot makers, improving their playmaking. And I'm excited to see what Garland does this season, if he can show that he's more of a passer than he showed in his very limited sample at Vanderbilt, and if he can get to the rim and how good his shooting really is, because it was elite in his small sample. And I think there's a lot of reason to believe he's a very good shooter, and that's why the Cavs took him at the fifth overall pick. But there's definitely fit concerns, and that's why I was pretty low on the draft overall. But the thing keeping it afloat again was Kevin Porter, just such a fantastic value pick in terms of pure value, meaning based on my personal draft big board, where I had them ranked, no, where they got drafted minus where I had them ranked. Kevin Porter Jr. was the fifth best value pick of the draft. He got picked 17 spots ahead of where I had him ranked, which is 13th in this class. So that's just that was just the right idea for a late first round type of pick on a wing with super high upside. If he fails, you're not losing too much. They did pay a lot of picks and money for him, but ultimately it's not nearly as much as missing on a top five or a top 10 pick. And actually, Dylan Windler, I didn't love the pick at the time of the draft. I had him a little bit lower, but I thought it was fine because he's a wing and shooting wings are just so important. But in the summer league, he looked really, really good. I think I undersold his feel for the game, especially on the defensive end in his college evaluation, because he was so good on defense in the summer league, constantly making excellent rotations and getting weak side steals and blocks, and just very solid on the end. He shot the ball super well. He hit a 40-foot step back three in his first game. And if that wasn't indicative of what was to come for the rest of the summer league, and it was a really great overall performance for Dylan Windler. We've kind of teased this before, but I love Dean Wade. He is so, so good. And his senior season marred with injuries, and he has issues with being aggressive, but he showed how great he is in summer league this year, and he's unmistakably good. Such a smart, versatile defender at 6'10", with his ability to move and his smart defense, basically like Windler, making rotation, getting smart blocks, smart steals, always being early in help. With him and Windler and Zussman, that Cleveland Cavaliers team was just an incredible team defense to watch. And with his shooting, with his floor spacing as a big and mobility and defense, I really don't have a hard time seeing him carving out a role as a bench big man floor spacer in the NBA. So overall, the projection for me for Cleveland young core isn't the most positive, but there's definitely a lot to like, and it's going to be exciting to monitor the development of their young guys this year, see if anybody can exceed expectations and burst past their ceiling, see if Colin Sexton can continue to build on his impressive end to his rookie season, and see how Darius Garland fares in the NBA in his first real live basketball in almost a year, because after missing his whole freshman season with an injury.
Yeah. Just, Ben, give thanks again for coming on, and just give everyone a plug of where they can find your work and find you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Ben_Pfeiffer_. That's spelled Ben_Pfeiffer_. I write about the NBA draft at Rookie Wire, USA Today Sports Media Group's draft site. Write about the Pelicans at SB Nation's The Bird Rights. Pacers at 8.9 seconds, and I occasionally do NBA things at Clutch Points. So, yep, that's where you can find me. I'll be doing a lot more work the rest of the summer and the rest of the year and for the upcoming season. So I'll have stuff out for that.
Well, thanks again, Ben. And everyone, that'll be it for today's show. We're going to be back on Friday with a show that I'm not exactly sure what it'll be yet, but we'll have something there on Friday. Again, we're having a big blowout mailbag as well later this summer, so submit those questions to Locked On Cavs on Twitter, lockedoncavs@gmail.com. A 5-star review on Apple Podcasts does guarantee your question gets answered. Thank you again for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for Tuesday, July 30th. Talk to you again later this week.